airs every Thursday at 5 on WEFT Community Radio, followed by See You at the Show, coming up next. Stay with us after that for Surfabilly Freakout at 6 p.m., Freeform Music at 7 p.m., Roots, Rock, and Reggae at 8 p.m., and Getting Your Jammies at 10 p.m.
See You at the Show recognizes and acknowledges that we gather today on Indigenous land taken through deception, coercion, violence, and genocide. We acknowledge the continued displacement and oppression of Native people and honor their commitments to survival, identity, and the protection of our world. All right, you Moulin Rouge fans that want more of that song that I usually give you are not going to get it today because we have other matters at hand here.
We have a full show today.
Yeah, we do. We have so much theater going on right now. Linda and I have been putting See You at the Show in the theaters all over the place. We have seen Heather's at Urbana, which is now done. But here's what you still can see. You still can see Human Terrain at Heartland Theater. You still can see She Kills Monsters at Parkland. You still can see Elf the Musical, Community Players in Bloomington, Death and Taxes, Monticello Theater, 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee, Decatur Underground Theater, American Idiot, Springfield Theater Center, all together now, CUTC at the Virginia, one night only tomorrow night, and Comedy of Errors, Cornstalk, and then opening tomorrow, Illinois Student Musicals, directed by Sophia Urban, Into the Woods. We're hoping to preview that tonight at Lincoln Hall. Very exciting. Tonight on the show, we are fortunate enough to have the director, Sandy Dolinsky, and one of the star actors of Heartland Theater's Human Terrain, which we just loved. We've seen it once. We're going to probably see it again. Sandy and Mindy, thank you for joining us on See You at the Show. Sandy, how did you come to be directing such an interesting, complicated, and serious show? Well, we sort out our Zoom difficulties here. we had Sandy
technical
all queued up.
Difficulties.
Yeah.
Let me know when you're ready.
We are almost ready. So, Sandy, how did you come?
Wonderful show like this.
It's a good question. Thanks, Eric. I always, when I read the shows that people are searching for a director, I usually choose a show that I think is difficult because I like that kind of challenge. And I used to do shows like Human Terrain a very, very long time ago, before I did Chekhov, before I did Shakespeare, Ibsen, you know, the heavies. But I really enjoyed this show. I enjoyed reading it, and it was most difficult. So I thought, well, that's the show to do.
It's nice. You like a challenge. That's great. Yeah. So does Heartland decide on their shows and then find directors, or do people come to them and say, we'd like to do this show? It sounds like they had to find a director for this one.
Right. And usually for the four main stage or for the four shows, full length shows, they will ask, the artistic director will ask if you would like to do one of them, or if you are partial to a show, or you just want to direct. So usually it's the artistic director that reaches out. And I know that there's a lot of people who ask him, put my name in the hopper, if you would, mm-hmm. so that sometime, you know, they can be challenged with the Heartland Theater. But that's usually the way they do it.
I did a radio show with Heartland back in the spring. And is this the first theater show that they've done?
They did Tartuffe.
We were at Tartuffe.
Yeah, I was going to say we were there.
Tartuffe. Oh, I love it. How easy we forget.
I know.
Yes.
Tartuffe was great. Yeah.
Dang, and this is the one time we're not going to be able to edit that.
That's okay. We've seen a lot. We've seen six shows in 8 days or something like
right.
that. So
wow.
It's okay.
Wow.
And so, yeah. Mindy, I assume that like us who need to hit to the highways to watch shows, you decided you needed to hit the highways to be in a show. What led you to Heartland and to this role in particular?
Yeah, that's a good story, actually. Let me try to pare it down so that I don't take up the whole segment. So I saw the announcement for the auditions, I think actually through when C with the show shared it. And immediately was like, no, that's too far away. It's not practical. My schedule is bananas. And so I kind of just put it away. And then Joy Hofsummer reached out to me and said, there's this play at Heartland Theater, and I think you would be a really good fit for one of the parts. You should audition. And I was like, oh, I can't. My schedule is crazy and it's so far away. And not to bring the conversation down, but we actually had an unexpected COVID-related death in our family right before that came through. So also then my head was like, how am I going to do theater right now? It just feels too, it feels like we just got sucked backwards from the progress we'd been making. Right. So I told her that. And then 3 days later, she emailed me again and said, what do you think about just having a conversation with the director? She doesn't know your name. I just mentioned I knew somebody. Up to you. And I was like, yeah, I'll talk to the director, because as soon as she sees my schedule, she's going to laugh me off the phone and it won't be a big deal. And unfortunately, I loved talking to Sandy, and then she was sending the script. And unfortunately, I loved the script, and I didn't want anyone else to get to do it. So I sent her my schedule, fully expecting that to be the end of that. And instead, she was like, all right, make it work. I mean, yeah. I auditioned, but sure. But I sent her all of these things before she bothered to take the time to audition me anyway, just because I thought, let's put all the cards on the table first and then see if she thinks I'm even a fit. And yeah, so then it happens.
Which is a great rule for everybody who goes in auditions. You should definitely be honest with your directors about your schedule.
Yeah.
If it's a good fit, it's a good fit and they'll work with you. But I've been involved in productions where people weren't completely honest because they were like, oh, if I look too busy or whatever, I won't get the part. Don't do that. Like, everybody should be. So it's great that you are like completely above board. And it's great that you got this part, because it was wonderful to see you in this part.
Yeah, I think, Mindy, if you tell us a little bit about who Dr. Mabry Hoffman is, that will also serve as a little bit of a summary of, I mean, then we'll get the flavor of what the show is about. So who is Dr. Mabry Hoffman in Human Terrain?
So she is an anthropologist who is part of a program, which is a real program that actually existed, called the Human Terrain System. And that program put anthropologists or cultural analysts in the war zones. They embedded them with combat units. And the idea, the very initial well-meaning idea behind the program was, we need some people in these places who can understand the culture and the people living around the war zones, who are impacted by, whose daily life is now war, but who are not military, as a way to kind of bridge gaps and build relationships and hopefully improve relations and understanding between both sides. And of course,
a new program that started because of the Iraqi war, or was it something that we'd done previously? Do you know if the military had ever done this before?
Sandy, you've done more research than I did on it.
Right. The program started in 2004, or they started working on it. So this had never been done before in a war zone, right? Mm-hmm. Where someone would be able to speak Iraqi and be able to communicate what is going on. Now, I think it is 2017 is when they stopped the program for various reasons, but anthropologists or whoever was embedded started being used as somewhat of a find out information, bring it back. And it wasn't necessarily about people, but it was about the war itself. And so that's why ultimately it failed, because it failed to keep to its mission.
Right. They were sort of turned into unwilling spies at a point where they were no longer meant to just be gathering cultural data, but they were meant to now be gathering information that could be used against the people. And so the whole premise of this show, and which is not a spoiler if you've read anything about what we're doing, but Dr. Mabry Hoffman is getting interrogated because of a friendship she formed with a woman while she was there. And a key piece about Mabry is she's very strong-willed, and she has very specific principles, but she is also naive, as I think people in this role probably were, to the fact that she is in a war zone. And having to remember that, or having to figure out how to make that your daily life when you're not a soldier, it's watching her kind of struggle with that hitting her in the face several times when she's not expecting it, or when she has forgotten that that's the world she's in right now.
Right. That's one of the things I was drawn to when we first started reading about this show long before it was cast, was women in a war zone and non-military. And because there's very strong women in this, three very strong female characters, which you don't really see often war talked about from a female perspective.
Right. And Sandy, you referenced that one of the things about this initiative was that you needed people that spoke Arabic. And now that's also something that you needed as a director. You needed people who could pass Arabic speaking. And I'm wondering how, because it was pulled off magnificently on different levels. And in particular, Vicky Snyder as Adelia. Is that, did I pronounce that right?
Adelia. Yes, Adelia.
Yeah, I mean, she spoke it not as though she was somebody who had learned it, which is, I think, what you did, Mindy, with Dr. Mabry. You spoke it as somebody who had become fluent, but it wasn't their language. And somehow it just flowed with such accent and such emotion in the words. How did you do that, Sandy? How did you get that out of these people?
I have a good friend who is a dialect coach in Chicago, and I called her, asked her if she could do this. And she said, yes, but I think you really need someone who speaks the language. And so she and I searched for a person in Chicago who would be able to speak Arabic. And it so happened that Martin Zabari said, I can do this. He was in one of the original, or the second show, where he played the Iraqi boy. So he knew what it was. He could speak Iraqi. And so that's how it happened. But we really reached out to a lot of people who don't live in this community because of the specialty of what we were doing. And certainly one was a person who could help the actors learn how to say the words and then make them their own. And I think, Mindy, correct me if I'm wrong here, I think he met with everybody twice, three people twice, and that he sent tapes to each person so that they could hear what he was saying and be able to say it back. So that's how the group learned. And it wasn't with a personal, you know, he come down here or they would go up there. It was really always through Zoom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, yeah. Mindy, did you always know what you were saying, or did you approach it more phonetically, like you just knew what sounds to make?
So Martin did Martin did an excellent job of helping us from a distance. So he gave us a PDF of the phonetics where he wrote out the sounds that we should be making. And then he recorded little voice memos, basically, of each thing. So the time that he put into just the prep for us before he even met with us was really, really lovely. The trick was that sometimes what he had written as the phonetics and what we heard seemed different.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally we were rewriting, and like, I have everything written out in my script the way I heard it from him. So the PDF got us started, and then the sounds helped us the next bit. And then meeting with him and saying it to him and having him correct or tweak us as needed was sort of the final, well, then that was the third layer. The final layer, then I asked him to please help me with inflection, because I wanted to know, I ask a lot of questions. I have a whole scene where I'm kind of conversationally interrogating somebody. And I ask a lot of questions. And in English, the question goes up at the end. How are you doing? What is your name? And I wanted to know, is that correct? Should it be somewhere else? Which word has the emphasis in this, in what I'm saying here? And so he really helped then narrow that down. So I may have known which words I was saying, but I wanted to be sure there was integrity to how the language sounds, because sometimes an inflection is not intuitive to English in another language. It goes someplace else.
One of the really cool things amidst this really beautiful set that you had put together was the where the transcriptions, I guess, of the Arabic was given very subtly, but in a way that didn't, it worked with the set. But one thing is that from where I was watching it off on stage right, almost to where there were seats that were called obstructed, I didn't even know the words were going up there. But really the acting and emoting and the inflection was all so good that I didn't feel like I was getting cheated out of anything, because I knew exactly what was taking place between these two people just as human beings, because that's what you were. You weren't just phonetically doing stuff. You were, anyway, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it, because it was, and when I later found out there were words, I was like, what a bonus. But you were acting just incredibly in character, and the relationships that you had both with the military personnel were also really, really strong. It was a great cast.
And a perfect place to watch it too, because you can feel so close to the action and feel like you're part of it. Like you're almost like watching this interrogation happen. And that really adds to it.
Mindy, did you feel like you were kind of acting with Bloomington's version of Lincoln Macula with Dave Lemon? He seemed as though he was like kind of a very much in that sort of an actor.
Well, not to say anything against Dave, who I love doing scenes with, but I think there's only one Lincoln.
Right.
Well, that's why I said the Bloomington version, the Blono version. I had that written in my notes. I'm like, Blono's own Lincoln Macula? Question mark? Because I have so many pages of notes, and that's why I haven't, you know, really endeavored to write the review I want to write, just because I think it will be so long. And so you're kind of like the friend I never call, because I need so much time when I want to speak to them. So, but we're so impressed with what you pulled off here, and every single cast member, the army, Adam Alexander as Cal and David Ward as Jake, they seemed really believable in the different types of soldiers. Even just looking at their pictures now, you see one, okay, he's the fresh faced soldier that hasn't done three tours. Right. And there's the guy who's got the edge. And thank God you had the orange tips on the edge of the prop guns, because it was scary plenty with the orange tips, and especially with, you know, what's gone on in the theater world with weapons, that was, it was daunting to see, but at the same time, that was the way to do it.
And I like how, I don't think the guns are ever pointed directly at a person or an audience member too. And I really appreciated mm-hmm. that as well. Oh, yeah. Even though they're obviously very safe guns and things like that. Mm-hmm. It's just, you got everything across without going over a line, which yeah. I really appreciate.
Our props person, Linda, was like very specific about all of the weapons stuff.
Yeah.
So we got a very good training. And I did have one night where I had a note that at a moment mine kept drifting towards, and I was like, and ever since then, I've been so conscious of it, of where it's pointing. And we asked them to do like the swap of a newspaper version of like holler at us if we start to drift our
right. Mm-hmm. Right.
We can be bolted and like, but yes, there was so much attention and care given to us as actors to make sure that we approached all mm-hmm. of those pieces with respect and like solemnity about what we were doing.
Right. You could really tell there's so much attention to detail from, you know, that really says something about your direction there, Sandy, and all the actors. It was, you could tell so much detail and care went into this show.
And the script really gave a lot of attention and sensitivity to the experience of an Iraqi person, and probably an Iraqi woman in particular. Just all of the talk about, it was so beautiful when she was saying, I am the hijab, the niqab, mm-hmm. and the veil. And then there was a chance to really make a convincing case for why it is actually an empowering mm-hmm. option for a woman. Mm-hmm. And have you had any feedback from anybody from the Middle East or Iraqi people in particular that have seen the show?
I haven't. I don't know, Mindy, if someone has said something to you, but, you know, look around in our town in Bloomington Normal, and that is not a huge group of people, right? So we have not gotten any kind of a response, but I can say that my cousin, who was in the army and was in Iraq, he said to me, he said, that's so true, Sandy, everything that was done. I was in a place like that. These things happened. And it really took me back to what I experienced in Iraq. And you have to know, it was so good, so right. And I was glad to get that kind of feedback, because we did work a lot with the weapons. Danny, who is from the U of I, came over twice. And we learned how to give a weapon, our stage manager, give the weapon to an actor, what is said, what the actor says, and that person has that weapon. Nobody else works with it. And it was around the Rust incident. And so it made it very important that we knew how to handle the weapon, where you point, and you don't point it at an audience member, you know, down a vom, that's where the target was, or upstage, so that it was never, a patron was never confronted with looking at the barrel of a weapon. And it was just, it was because of all these circumstances and how carefully Danny worked with the actors in falls, in hits, in all the ways that you hold that weapon. So it was a good share of the actors who worked with weapons.
It was fun for us to see Danny in the program, not because we know him personally, but because we had just seen him two nights previously on the stage at Cranard in Fun Home, where he was magnificent. So it was, but when I was just thumbing through the program at intermission, I was like, I said, hey, Linda, this guy looks a lot like the guy from Fun Home. And then we so Mindy, probably because this is a three-week run, you won't get to see Fun Home at U of I. But anyway, the great thing about your show is you get a three-week run for a play, which is, it's what we do at the station, but it's a great opportunity to have a lot of chances to perform. What are the remaining show dates and times? How can people see this amazing show?
I have to look. I'm sorry. We go.
We have the program right here. We didn't mean to put you on the spot.
We always do that.
We always do that.
No, I've got it. I've got it. Well, this weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, Sunday matinee. And then next Thursday, Friday, Saturday, where there's a matinee and an evening performance. So two in one day, Mindy.
And there are there, as far as you know, are there tickets still available for every performance?
Yes, except for the Sunday. The Sunday is when we have a panel discussion, right. And that one is oversold, I should say. But everything else is there are seats available. And you know, it's so hard for people now. We're coming out of COVID, and people are leery of going to the theater or a closed space. But our actors are all vaccinated. They wear masks. The chairs are cleaned every night after a performance, and the patrons are wearing masks. So we have done as much as we possibly could do to make the space safe for people.
And but it's, you know, I feel very there. I wish that more people came and looked at your clear masks, because I feel like that's like the best of both worlds. You're masked, but yet you can still see all the facial expressions. I almost forget that you're masked because it's so well done. And all the patrons are wearing masks. So it feels very comfortable and safe.
Did they inhibit you at all, Mindy?
A little. I mean, me, because without having any spoilers, I have a heavy dose of emotions throughout the show, and having a mask in the way of my nose or whatever, I notice it. Only because I can't easily like get to my face.
Right.
Yeah. I could if you know, I were having emotions in a show pre-COVID. Mm-hmm. But honestly, like it's not such an addition that I feel like I can't be in the moment, certainly. Because I do get emotional. So
yeah, you have the whole range of emotions throughout this whole show.
Yeah. Great. Well, the crowd definitely loses nothing. And having been there twice, because we were there for Tartuffe, remember?
I know.
it is, everything about it feels really safe. You know, in each place we've sat, it's felt good. I think Heartland just does great things. Yet there's a really beautiful set. I remember, Sandy, you showed me the sketch of it originally, and I was like, that seems a little unlikely to be fulfilled with that much detail. And it was really great. And
so the boy who sits in the there on the stage before the show starts, who is he?
It feels like it's a riddle that we're supposed to solve, and we didn't.
No, his name, the show you saw, was Otis Turecki. And Connie, who has worked on our stage many times, her son. But, you know, I thought it isn't just about an Iraqi female, but men are killed. Children are killed. It was a horrible war. So I put in, it's not in the script, but I put in a child just staring, which would give you kind of the feel of what the show is going to be. Not that there aren't laughs, because there are laughs, but you know, the children are affected just as much as mothers and fathers. And then I wanted some toys on stage. So someone in our neighborhood was throwing away this little car. And so at 11 o'clock at night, I snuck to that place and I'm taking this car down the middle of the street. Oh my gosh. And then Chuck said, well, what do we do with this? I said, just cut it in half, put parts of it on the stage, or other kinds of things like a teddy bear. Uh-huh. Is in one place, and parachuters, little toys are in another place, so that people can remember that it was a war that included children, mothers, aunts, uncles, fathers, grandfathers, that it just wasn't a simple war, but it affected many.
I thought it set the scene really well, and I thought he did a great job, you know, just being really still and